Welcome to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. This is the place where we help committed couples who want to level up their marriage experience newfound clarity, hope, and confidence. We're Matthew and Kim, co-hosts and husband and wife.
In 26 years together, we've seen a lot and never thought it could be as good as it is right now. We're here to help you successfully navigate the messy, dirty, and wonderful world of marriage.
We believe all couples deserve and are capable of experiencing an extraordinary and fulfilling marriage. And each week, we're bringing you life lessons from real-life successful couples to help you grow and strengthen your relationship.
We'll get started right after this message.
If you want to learn how to experience the best, most fulfilling year of your marriage, we invite you to order Matthew's new book, Kick-Ass Husband, Winning at Life, Marriage, and Sex. You can get it at Amazon.com or visit Matthew's website, www.matthewphoffman.com. Again, that's Amazon.com or www.matthewphoffman.com. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. Today, we're hanging out with Eric and Natalie Southward. Natalie is the founder and director of Life Transformation Counseling, where she works as a licensed mental health counselor. She has over 16 years of mental health counseling experience and is trained in Gottman Couples Therapy, which she uses to host individual and marital intensives. Natalie is also a Gottman Bringing Baby Home and Seven Principles educator. She also loves speaking at a variety of organizations, including schools, community groups, and churches. Having faced many challenging life situations of her own, Natalie believes that one of her greatest strengths is the ability to relate to others going through life hurts and struggles. Eric is the founder and director of Southward Elite Basketball and Little Hoopsters Academy. Little Hoopsters Academy, LHA, is a 5-month basketball development program for children. He teaches them life lessons such as teamwork, respect, discipline, and sportsmanship. Eric also runs individual and group basketball training for kids ages 5 through 17 through Southward Elite Basketball, SEB. Eric's childhood heavily impacted him and developed him into the man he is today. He was raised in a single-parent household in an urban community where he lived with his mom, 3 siblings, and 2 nephews. His calling in life became giving back to his community and mentoring and coaching kids. Eric and Natalie met in middle school when they were 12. They both had a love for the game of basketball, but not quite yet for each other. They continue to run into each other because of their love for basketball and both being collegiate athletes. A few years after college, Eric and Natalie crossed paths again. This time, it was different. After going on a date, they became best friends and said, "I do," just 3 years later. Now, they have been married and together for 13 years. Keep listening to learn some of the things you can implement today to improve your relationship right now. Welcome back to the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. We are doing a killer recap today, a recap on Eric and Natalie Southward, another dynamic duo for sure.
Loved this interview with them. They were awesome. Definitely a kick-ass couple that really, in my opinion, gets it.
They do in such a fun, loving way. It's so cool to see how two people from different backgrounds that known each other a long time. They said, what, since teenagers,
yeah,
right?
12.
Teenagers.
They've known each other since they were 12 years old. And they came back together 13 years ago and have been married 10 of the 13 years. So they have known each other their whole lives pretty much. And it's really very cute to see them together and thriving and happy. And they have a lot of fun together.
They do. And that's, you know, that's going to be one of the new pillars coming out for KCN, Kick Ass Couples Nation. It's playfulness, that joy and having fun together. And they do it. And you can just see that in their relationship and how they interact with each other. And what a great foundation to have of that commonality and joy for one another, but also for life and what each of them are doing.
I agree. They came together and would say that they are now, you know, just best friends. They're athletes together. They also are competitive. They do a lot of fun things with their children. And so they're a very active family. And I think that what's important to note when we back up with them, that they did come from very different backgrounds. I know that Natalie, she was raised and supported by her parents. And while they didn't show a lot of affection for each other, her parents, they had a lot of affection, support, and there was a lot of giving to the children. And then as far as Eric, he grew up with his mom raised him, and his dad was not in the picture at all. He knows his dad and has, you know, since spent a little bit of time with his dad, but his dad was really not a part of his upbringing.
No, he wasn't. And I think that, you know, Eric missed that a lot. And he, what was really neat is he is so grateful to his mom and expressed gratitude for her, but he was also able to sit back and say, you know, love was not expressed by his mom much to the kids either. I mean, she said, you know, not a lot of physical contact, not a lot of touching, not a lot of tenderness, yet he has great respect and appreciation for her. And it was really informed how he wanted to approach his relationship with Natalie and with their kids. They came together and said, you know, no, we're going to be. And he said, I had to learn. Natalie taught me how to love that way. Because it just wasn't modeled to him. And I think that he was open and receptive to it and yearned for it, really, and loves expressing that tenderness to her and to their children right now.
I love that he was willing to accept the influence from Natalie and to say, hey, teach me. I want to know. I want to learn. And, you know, now for him, it's very natural for him to hug his kids hello and goodbye. And he said, we say I love you all the time. And I can only imagine, though, as a person being raised in a family where no one says I love you, or they don't, there's not a lot of physical touch. I think it's very hard to learn how to do that with someone else when it doesn't come naturally to you. So I think that's definitely a hurdle that a lot of people have to sort of jump over when they're not raised with that type of affection.
Right. If it's a way that you're not used to getting it, it may not be comfortable, certainly.
Exactly.
Not habitual, right? But, and everybody has different varying degrees. It doesn't mean you have to be as effusive. You know, I mean, Kim knows I am a touchy-feely, huggy person. And physical touch is huge to me. And thank goodness it's also big for Kim. And that's one way, not the only way, but one way we love to see love felt and expressed. And it's a huge part of our relationship. And we model that for each other. And I don't know if touch was not one of your love languages, I think that would be tough. And I think because it's so important to me. So it's really about that understanding, right? And I think Eric and Natalie did a great job of seeing where they came from and then working together. And he was open to that influence, and it's so present in their own relationship. And one of the things I loved is they have a strong faith. And I think Natalie said that they love God more than they love each other. So they really are getting, they know that there's a love greater than themselves that binds them together. And I think that's a wonderful foundation to start from, is because it's not all about them. They realize that they have servants' hearts and they're here to help others in the work that they do, in Eric's basketball training and being a coach and helping youth, and in Natalie's work with couples and as a licensed marriage therapist and what she does for counselors. And I love that bond that pulled them together into this relationship and kind of really led to my first point, which was prioritization and making sure that they are, that's the lens that we look through, Kim, and our platform and for this podcast and the work that we do. And I think that they successfully put each other first in everything they think, they say, and they do.
I would agree with that. I think that prioritization, they make each other a priority. That is one of the most important things you can do in your relationship, is making sure that you know your spouse's love language and that you prioritize those things that they desire the most, right? If I'm doing something for you and it's not a touch point for you, then I'm not really servicing you, so to speak. I am not making you happy and feel joyful if I'm not doing the things that are important to you. And so I think knowing those love languages and prioritizing the relationship and really making time for each other is such an important thing. One of my takeaways from this interview was that she said, what I think makes us a kick-ass couple is that we, not only are we like-minded, but we also stay very curious about each other. And we continue to ask each other questions and engage. And she said, this really hit home with me. She said, I love when he tells me stories. And it may be, after 13 years, a story that you have heard probably 3 times already, right? But she just lets Eric tell it. And because she said, every time I listen, I have a deeper understanding of him and sometimes even a different takeaway. I learn something more. And so I thought that that was really special, that every time she hears a story, she hears something different or even, you know, more genuine in his story than the time before.
And that she allows it to happen. You know, a tendency that we all have is when we know where something is going, yes, we cut, oh, geez, it's this story again. Or, oh, I already know that. You already told me that. She could cut it off, but she allows it to develop and she just takes delight.
She does.
And seeing what he's going to do and how he's going to do it. And she said, yeah, I always learn and find something new in that story. And so she's looking for that wonder and looking for that joy. And I love that. And I think it was a great expression.
Me too. What else did you find in that interview that really stood out to you?
Sure. You know, when conflict resolution, that's something we talk about with all of our couples in our interview. And I think that I think Natalie and Eric both kind of spoke to their ability to compartmentalize. In other words, when something is negative or going on or some conflict arises, that she said they were really good about not letting it take over the relationship. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't become larger than life. They're able to say, wait a minute, you know, we're in a moment, we're at a work thing for him and we're doing a training for him, or I've got something going on. She said, you know what? Let's put that in a compartment. And she can, doesn't, in other words, the conflict doesn't take over and make her blind to who he really is. And he doesn't see the conflict as taking away the love that he has for her. Not that they're not going to come back and revisit it, because they do.
Right. But
they don't allow the conflict to overtake. Because that's what the conflict, some people call it the devil, right? You know, some people say that stinking thinking. When those things try to creep in, you can allow them to come front and center. You can say, you know what? Hey, let's put this where it belongs. And if now's not the time, let's continue to enjoy the love and the experience that we're having and come back to the issue and deal with it later.
I love that, because I think that's where a lot of people have challenges, is that they cannot do that. They chase after each other and they want to solve everything right then and there, or they want to have the last word. And they have learned how to say, okay, we're not agreeing on this issue right now, but we're going to table it and we're going to come back to it. We're not going to forget about it, but we're going to come back to it. And we may go play basketball together as a family. Maybe we're going to play a game together, but we're not going to be nasty and ugly with each other, because we're friends first and we love each other deeply. And we're going to, exactly what you said, compartmentalize this. We're going to put it over here, but we're really not going to let it affect who we are as a family. And they're able to move through that. And then later in the evening, come back and say, okay, let's bring, you know, this issue out again and let's deal with it and let's face what's really happening here. And so many times she said, we would like look at each other and go, well, that was kind of silly, or that just didn't make sense. Right. Why? Well,
yeah.
You know, in the moment, it seems like something that's so big and such an issue. But a lot of times when they came back to it, it was really nothing at all.
And I think it's important to remember that she said, there's no cold shoulder And it's not being fake. You're not saying, oh, I'm going to pretend everything's okay. It's not doing that at all. She said, you got to be willing to take a pause in the midst of conflict, put it where it is, self-regulate, and know that the resolution, if it can be resolved, will occur. And, you know, there's a, everybody talks about unconditional love and conditional love. Unconditional love is love remaining love, even though it may not be getting a response in the moment, because you know what you're both committed to. That's called unconditional love. Your love, no matter what, because it's not the condition in the moment, the conflict, that's changing the love. The love still exists, so you can still express love through conflict. Conflict doesn't mean you hate each other. Conflict doesn't mean you're nasty and taking those cheap shots or trying to pursue and solve something in the moment, even though it's not the right time, right? And learning how to take that pause. And I love that. I think Eric may have said, you know, you got to listen to hear instead of listening to speak. So in that conflict, are you listening and waiting for your chance to say your piece? Or are you listening and seeking that understanding so you can have a better idea of where your spouse is coming from?
Yes, yes. And I love that they also talked a little bit about in the conflict, the self-regulating and really trying to create at the end of the day a win-win, right? What's the goal and the purpose about of what I'm about to say or what I'm about to speak to you, right? And I think that that's really important. Does what I'm going to say meet that goal? That's a great question to ask.
Right.
Because if it doesn't, maybe I shouldn't be saying it. Maybe it shouldn't be spoken.
Yeah,
if it doesn't meet the goal.
Yeah, it's a filter. It's a filter exactly. For sure. I mean, you did a great job. When it comes to creating a kick-ass marriage, do you ever wonder what you could be doing better? Have you ever thought how helpful it would be to be a part of a like-minded community of other imperfect couples who want to level up in their number one relationship? Come visit Kick-Ass Couples Nation, where you can talk with people just like you who are looking for ways to invest in and increase their joy, commitment, and fulfillment in their most important human relationship. You'll have access to a team of licensed marriage therapists, coaches, articles, podcasts, live webinars, and more. Just visit MatthewPHoffman.com so you can learn more about a community that's ready to help you level up. That's MatthewPHoffman.com so you can become of the growing Kick-Ass Couples Nation right now. You know, sometimes, and especially in conflict, right, when someone does something that might be cutting to us or bite or pull us the wrong way, our response is to be defensive and to throw something back. Oh, yeah, well, you, and what about this? Let me get another jab in, right? If you look at it as a sparring match, then you are going to be looking for the next hit, the next strike. And we were having a disagreement the other day. You said something to me that, I don't even remember what it was in the moment, but it cut me the wrong way. And I came back with a smart remark. And you looked at me and you paused. And she smiled and she goes, did that make you feel better? Do you feel better after having said that comment to me right now? And I thought, and I said, nope. And you said, okay. And we moved on.
That's right.
And so you made me catch myself in the middle of it. And that was a loving thing to do. And I knew it. And I took the cheap shot. And it didn't resolve anything. And I didn't feel better, right? So we think we have it like this tasty morsel in our mouth. And we just want to spit it out, right? And get it out there. And it didn't accomplish anything. And you called it for what it was. And
moved on. And I didn't do it as I could have lashed back at you. That would have been a really easy thing to do because in my prior self, I would have gone whoosh right in, right? And I've learned now just to put a hand on you and just to gently say, okay, you know, did that make you feel better? Did you really need to do that right then and there? And do it softly and lovingly. And you'll look at me sometimes and go, no, sorry, didn't really mean to do that. So I think that how we approach each other is really important when we have conflict.
And holding each other accountable and saying, you can even look at, I can look at you sometimes, I can go, and maybe you think it, and maybe sometimes you say, you know, that's just not you speaking right now, and I'm going to move on. And because it's not fair for me to judge by a comment, right? It's the whole body of work. And, you know, in communication, 9 times out of 10, even more than that, with my spouse, I can say her communication and her motivation is wonderful and loving and supportive. So that should be the majority of what we're talking about. Let's not focus and spend on time on that 2%, you know, the 2% rule, which is, it just doesn't deserve to have the space in the relationship. And so I'm glad we can, and hopefully you too can move beyond that, and let's identify it for what it is and keep it in the correct frame of reference.
Yes. What else do you have for me on this particular interview that you really resonated with?
Well, gosh, there was something that, and in the interview, if you haven't watched it, I encourage you to go do it, because Natalie and Eric gave some good meat and potatoes.
Yeah, she nailed it when she broke down intimacy.
And that's where I wanted to go next. She talked about intimacy and she reeled it off the cuff, and I paused. I go, okay, Natalie, slow down and let's be real deliberate. So I think if you and I walking through that will be really helpful for everybody about, because I think the question that we asked her was, what do you need to experience true intimacy? And she had it ready and right there. And she said, you know, to get emotional intimacy, which leads to physical, which goes to sexual, I said, ho, slow down. She goes, okay, first it needs to be spiritual for her. And she talked about, you know, praying together. I go, well, how do you experience that? She goes, well, spiritual intimacy, we pray together, or we pray for each other, or we pray for our family. And she goes, that bond brings us together. She said, you know what is, I just think so sexy in my husband. She goes, I hear him. She goes, I'll creep outside the bedroom at night and they're saying the goodnight prayers with our kids, and I'll hear him praying with our kids. And she said, man, that is just so attractive for me to see that, because I see his commitment, and when I see his commitment, his spiritual strength, that makes us more intimate spiritually.
Yes. And then she talked about the next one, which was the emotional, I believe.
Intimacy. Yeah, that was next. Yeah, and emotional, she said, was really having stimulating conversations with each other, being connected, being honest with each other, and that brings them more intimate because they're having those deep conversations with each other about something, and that, you know, really brings them together emotionally, which was that second step for her. And I think she said the third one, Kim, was kind of more intellectual, right? In other words, can they talk about something, their viewpoints, their feelings on something at an intellectual level? So, you know, more thought-provoking.
Yeah, I think the emotional and the intellectual kind of went together.
Right.
We're emotional, and but yet we're having these great stimulating conversations with each other. And then that brings us to where they're really connecting with each other. They're being honest with each other, and they're trusting each other with their feelings, which I think is really important.
Yeah, their feelings and their insecurities. Like when you're willing to tell somebody what you struggle with and what you're feeling, or I'm a little insecure about this. And we've talked before that everybody has the right to feel the way they want to feel. And when your spouse shares that, when they're vulnerable and they're trusting you about a concern or a care or an insecurity, that's a great opportunity for intimacy. And for you to say, right, you're not jumping in to solve, but to say, hey, tell me more about that. Or why is that so important to you? Or why does that strike a chord for you? Or really, when did you start feeling that way? And I think that they had did that. And then once they do that, that's what leads to the last, right, which is the physical intimacy. And the physical intimacy, it might lead to something, but it could be proximity. It could be hand-holding, right? It could be kissing, that gentle touch, rubbing shoulders, or just non-sexual.
Being next, just being next to each other and close to each other, I think, is that working really physical. Out. Yeah, you could be, you know, absolute. You could be working out together. You could be playing basketball together, but you're near each other and you're, you know, touching one another and you're just close to each other, which then leads to the sexual part. And that, you know, you can have that physical touch and sometimes it leads to the sexual part and sometimes it doesn't. But when you've got all of these things lined up, right, you've got the spiritual, And then you've got the emotional and the intellectual, and then your physical. Sometimes that can't help but lead to the sexual intimacy part. And I think that she said, was the dopamine for her soul, which I loved.
You stole my quote. Oh, she said that, dopamine for my soul. Yeah. And that's what intimacy should be. And so the times, you know, when I can think of the times that we've been intimate and they have been the most memorable or wonderful, I think it's because it was a time that was built on all those connections. So when you take the time and you go through that process, and it's not a process, it's not a checklist, but it's awareness. And when you build those experiences together, it makes a form of intimacy, which could be sexual, just so incredibly fulfilling and wonderful and memorable. And if you want that deep love connection, it's really worth building it and working towards it, because the crescendo, as she was saying, you know, dopamine for my soul, and we've had it too, is so incredible. And I love that they have the joy and the knowledge of their relationship, and you know, it spills over, and it spills over to everybody else. And so if you're taking the time to build that intimacy, as Kim and I have talked about, as Natalie and Eric so lovingly shared with us, it can be just a beautiful demonstration for everybody.
And I feel like for couples, you know, as the male counterpart in the relationship, I think if you get used to practicing these other things, the sexual, just, it will be there.
It falls in.
If you put all those other things into practice, then your partner is going to feel heard, right? Supported, love, respected. They're going to feel safe.
Recognized.
And then that sexual intimacy just...
It's the result.
It's the result.
It's the outcome. Yeah, it's the outcome, guys. And, you know, guys, I know that men and women are both desirable of getting there. And if you do the work, then the result comes, no doubt. And it's definitely an investment in the relationship. And Natalie and Eric have certainly invested in each other and do so many wonderful things together. Great examples, starting with their faith outside. And if you haven't heard this interview, I really encourage you to go listen. What a dynamic couple. They're in the thick of it with kids and two different businesses growing and supporting each other. So it's possible and it can be done. All the demands of life that seem to be weighing you down, and when you focus on those right things and getting it right and investing in it, it pays off in spades.
This interview is definitely worth your time. Please go back and see it in its entirety. They have just so many great things to share with all of you. So I do hope you'll do that.
Thanks for joining us again today on the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. And we hope you remember that happily ever after does not just happen.
That's all we've got for this episode of the Kick-Ass Couples Podcast. If you like the content of this show, you'll love Matthew's newly released book, Kick-Ass Husband, Winning at Life, Marriage, and Sex. To receive a digital mini book of quotes and images from the book, all you have to do is rate this show and leave a review in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to listen. Then email us a screenshot of your review at podcast@kickasscouplespodcast.com, and we'll get it over to you right away. Until next time, remember, happily ever after doesn't just happen. It's on purpose.